We are starting chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called Mayhem at the Ministry. Mr. Weasley woke them after only a few hours. He used magic to pack up the tents, and then they left the campsite as quickly as possible, passing Mr. Roberts at the door of his cottage. Mr. Roberts had a vague, dazed look about him, and he waved them off with a Merry Christmas. He'll be all right, said Mr. Weasley, quietly. They marched off onto the moor. Sometimes when a person's memory is modified, it makes him a bit disoriented for a while. And that was a big thing they had to make him forget. They heard urgent voices as they approached the spot where the portkeys lay. And when they reached it, they found a great number of witches and wizards gathered around Basil, the keeper of the portkeys, all clamoring to get away from the campsite as quickly as possible. Mr. Weasley had a hurried discussion with Basil. They joined the queue. Were able to take an old rubber tire back to Stotehead Hill before the sun had really risen. They walked back through Ottery St. Catchpole and up the damp lane towards the burrow in the dawn light, talking very little because they were so exhausted, thinking longingly of their breakfast. As they'd rounded the corner and the burrow came into view, a cry echoed along the lane.
Oh, thank goodness, thank goodness!
Mr. Weasley, who had evidently been waiting for them in the front yard.
Mr.
What?
Didn't you say Mr.?
Oh, sorry. Mrs. Weasley, who had evidently been waiting for them in the front yard, came running toward them, still wearing her bedroom slippers, her face pale and strained, a rolled-up copy of the Daily Prophet clutched in her hand.
Arthur, I've been worried, so worried.
She flung her arms around Mr. Weasley's neck, and the Daily Prophet fell out of her limp hand onto the ground. Looking down, Harry saw the headline, Scenes of Terror at the Quidditch World Cup, complete with a twinkling black-and-white photograph of the dark mark over the treetops.
You're all right,
Mrs. Weasley muttered distractedly, releasing Mr. Weasley, and staring around them with red eyes.
You're alive, oh boy.
And to everybody's surprise, she seized Fred and George and pulled them both in such a tight hug that their heads banged together.
Ouch!
Ouch, Mom! You're strangling us!
I shouted at you before you left, said Mrs. Weasley, starting to sob. It's all I've been thinking about. No. What if you know who had got you? And the last thing I said to you was that you didn't get enough owls? Oh, Fred, George.
Come on now, Molly. We're all perfectly okay, said Mr. Weasley soothingly, prizing her off the twins and leading her back toward the house.
Prizing her? Oh, I wonder what that means. Hi.
Oh, it probably comes from, so, French, please means take.
Oh, there you go. Good job, babe. You're so smart.
Yeah, whatever.
I brag about you a lot. It's unfortunate. I think that it's like, relationships when I try to make new friends. And it's like, well, my boyfriend is so smart. He speaks like seven languages.
I don't speak seven languages. I speak one. And I'm not that well at that.
I'm proud of you.
So you scare off all your friends?
Well, I guess they're not friends.
All your potential friends?
Yep.
Can you talk about me with your opera people?
Mm-hmm.
Do they get annoyed?
Oh, no. Probably.
Did any of them talk about their boyfriend?
Mm-hmm.
Did they?
Well, I just talked about one of the girls has a boyfriend who's like a tattooed and pierced up, and she's just talking
about one?
The one who played Nona.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I couldn't see her face. It was weird. Like I had.
She's kind of. I don't want to say anything while I'm being recorded. Let's keep reading.
The funny thing about wearing that much makeup is that I was sure that if I ever saw her, I would not recognize
you
her.
You wouldn't.
Like I wouldn't even know that I'd ever seen her before.
Yeah, you totally wouldn't know.
Bill, he added in an undertone. Pick up the paper, I want to see what it says. When they were all crammed in the tiny kitchen and Hermione made Mrs. Weasley.
Wait a minute. Can I just like interject? Because like you do this all the time in the first place. Why do they have to have a tiny kitchen? This is stupid. They can have this enlargement spells, but it makes it okay, I'm sorry. Saying.
You want another reason?
Why?
It makes for a good story.
Okay, fine.
This is what I was talking about before. There are all these little things that don't make any sense, like, when you think about them logically. But it does make it
a good story, right?
So, I was complaining to you before, and you were telling me to stop it.
I know, but I mean, I'm just saying that I'm human, too, and that I have these, like, thoughts as well.
Oh, I totally agree. It's ridiculous.
But you're right. It makes it.
I mean, given the fact that
they can use... But if I was magical, everything would be great.
Yeah, and given the fact that they can use magic, they could make all sorts of money in the real world anyways, if they wanted.
I know. So, also, in the wizarding world, like, couldn't you just be creative? Like, seriously, you could totally make money by just being creative. Like, look at Fred and George. They're going to be billionaires because they're, like, creative.
And then they got lucky with their startup money. Otherwise, they would need to get an investor who's going to invest in a bunch of stuff.
Well, that's true. But okay.
And what are the odds that one team wins but the other team gets the snitch? You know, the whole game is designed so that whoever gets the snitch wins.
No, that's not how they get the money.
Yeah, remember?
No.
They just won a boatload of money.
Well, that's not the only money. They also get Harry's money from the...
Oh, they do, right. Okay. But they also get lucky with that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they just...
Wait, so how did they win? And did they win real money or leprechaun money?
Real money.
Okay. From who?
They bet 17
galleons
with Ludo Bagman, yeah, with good odds, presumably. They better have gotten, like, ridiculous odds. Like, that kind of thing is, like, 100 to 1 odds, you know, or better.
I doubt Ludo Bagman lost so much money, though.
He should have. That's the kind of bet that he,
I bet he only lost, like, 50 galleons. I'm just saying.
All right, you're saying 3 to 1? They only would have taken 3 to 1?
Yep. Otherwise, I don't think that he would have taken...
Ben and George were pretty stupid to make that kind of bet for only 3 to 1.
Okay.
Anyways, when they were all crammed into the tiny kitchen, and Hermione had made Mrs. Weasley a cup of very strong tea, into which Mr. Weasley had insisted in pouring a shot of Ogden's old fire whiskey, Bill handed his father the newspaper, and Mr. Weasley scanned the front page while Percy...
Whiskey.
They're English. They drink tea with everything.
That's true.
I knew it, said Mr. Weasley heavily. Ministry blunders, culprits not apprehended, black security, dark wizards running unchecked, national disgrace. Who wrote this? Of course, Rita Skeeter. That woman's got it in for the Ministry of Magic, said Percy furiously. Last week she was saying we were wasting our time quibbling about cauldron thickness when we should be stamping out vampires. If it wasn't specifically stated in paragraph 12 of the guidelines for the treatment of non-wizard part human. Do us a favor, Purse, said Bill, yawning. Shut up. I mentioned, said Mr. Weasley, his eyes widening behind his glasses as he reached the bottom of the Daily Prophet article. Where, spluttered Mrs. Weasley, choking on her tea and whiskey. If I'd seen that, I'd have known you were alive. Not by name, said Mr. Weasley. Listen to this. If the terrified wizards and witches who waited breathlessly for news at the edge of the wood expected reassurance from the Ministry of Magic, they were sadly disappointed. A ministry official emerged some time after the appearance of the Dark Mark, alleging that nobody had been hurt but refusing to give any new information. Whether the statement will be enough to quash the rumors that several bodies were removed from the wood an hour later remains to be seen. Oh, really, said Mr. Weasley in exasperation. Handing the paper to Percy. Nobody was hurt. What was I supposed to say? Rumors that several bodies were removed from the woods. Well, there certainly will be rumors now that she's printed that. He heaved a deep sigh. Molly, I'm going to have to go over into the office. This is going to take some smoothing over. I'll come with you, Father, said Percy importantly. No. Mr. Crouch will need all hands on deck. I can give him my cauldron report in person. He bustled out of the kitchen. Mrs. Weasley looked most upset. Arthur, you're supposed to be on holiday. It hasn't got anything to do with the office. Surely they can handle this without you. I've got to go, Molly, said Mr. Weasley. I've made things worse. I'll just change into my robes and I'll be off. Mrs. Weasley, said Harry suddenly, unable to contain himself. Hedwig hasn't arrived with a letter for me, has she? Hedwig, dear, said Mrs. Weasley, distractedly. No, there hasn't been any post at all. Ron and Hermione both looked at Harry curiously. With a meaningful look at both of them, he said, All right if I go dump my stuff in your room, Ron? Yeah, I think I will too, said Ron at once. Hermione, Yes, she said quickly, and the three of them marched out of the kitchen and up the stairs.
You stop there, no, just a little longer.
But they're going to start a long conversation.
Oh, just go a little longer. We can pick up in the middle of the room.
What's up, Harry? Said Ron, the moment they had closed the door of the attic behind them. There's something I haven't told you, said Harry. On Saturday morning, I woke up with my scar hurting again. Ron's and Hermione's reactions were almost exactly as Harry had imagined them back in his bedroom on Privet Drive. Hermione gasped and started making suggestions at once, mentioning a number of reference books, and everybody from Albus Dumbledore to Madame Pomfrey, the Hogwarts nurse. Ron simply looked dumbstruck. But he wasn't there, was he? You know who I mean. The last time your scar kept hurting, he was at Hogwarts, wasn't he? I'm sure he wasn't on Privet Drive, said Harry. But I was dreaming about him. Him and Peter, you know, Wormtail. I can't remember all of it, but they were plotting to kill someone. He teetered for a moment on the verge of saying me, but he couldn't bring himself to make Hermione any more horrified than she already did. Look any more horrified than she already did. It was only a dream, said Ron bracingly, just a nightmare. Yeah, but was it? Said Harry, turning to look out the window at the brightening sky. It's weird, isn't it? My scar hurts, and 3 days later, Death Eaters are on the march, and Voldemort's sign is up in the sky again. Don't say his name, Ron hissed. Why is Ron such a fool? And remember what Professor Trelawney said, Harry went on, ignoring Ron. At the end of last year, Professor Trelawney was their divination teacher at Hogwarts. Hermione's terrified look vanished as she let out a decisive snort. Oh, Harry, you aren't going to pay any attention to anything that old fraud says. You weren't there, said Harry. You didn't hear her. This time was different. She went into a trance, I told you, a real one. And then she said the Dark Lord would rise again, greater and more terrible than ever before. And he'd manage it because his servant was going back to go back to him. And that night, Wormtail escaped. There was a silence in which Ron fidgeted absentmindedly with a hole in his Chudley Canyon bedspread. Why were you asking if Hedwig had come? Hermione asked, expecting a letter. I told Sirius about my scar, said Harry, shrugging. I'm waiting to hear for his answer. Good thinking, said Ron, his expression clearing. I'll bet Sirius will know what to do. I hope he'd get back to me quickly, said Harry. We don't know where Sirius is. He could be in Africa or somewhere, couldn't he? Said Hermione reasonably. Hedwig's not going to manage that journey out in a few days. Yeah, I know, said Harry. There was a leaden feeling in his stomach as he looked out the window in the Hedwig-free sky. Come and have a game of Quidditch in the orchard, Harry, said Ron. Come on, 3-on-3. Bill and Charlie and Fred and George will play. Try out the Bronski thing. 3-on-3? With two seekers? Like, a seeker on each team?
I don't know.
Meaning there's one goalie and one offensive player on each team.
Yep.
That does not seem like...
It seems fun to me.
Who's he going to pass to?
I don't know, but it seems like fun.
At the very least...
Besides, they're flying on brooms. What the fuck do you want? It's awesome.
I mean, I can understand 3-on-3 if there are two offensive players, right?
Oh, I think that's great. I think it'll be really fun.
What, Harry's going to go off on his own, searching for a snitch?
Yep.
Ron,
that's
said
what
Hermione,
they do usually do.
In an I don't think you're being very sensitive sort of voice. Harry doesn't want to play Quidditch right now. He's worried. He's tired. We'll need to go to bed. Yeah, I want to play Quidditch, said Harry suddenly. Hang on, I'll get my firebolt. Hermione left the room, muttering something that sounded very much like boys. We should stop. Because there's three little stars signifying the change of scene. And tomorrow we will continue. The chapter 10. You. And you're going to bite me? You bit me. You're going to leave a mark?
Yeah. A carry mark.
You're very cute, Carrie.
Good night, Phil. Good night, Carrie. I love you, my dear.
I love you.
This is a good joke, you guys.
This is a good carry kit.
We watched Singing in the Rain tonight.
We did.
Tell us about it.
Okay. Well, it was very fun. And you told me that you like that I like movies like this.
Very much.
Because they're very fun.
And he liked it so much, and he really likes Gene Kelly and Danny Kaye. He's so great.
Danny Kaye's awesome. He's really cool. He's got such a funny face. And he's such a good dancer.
Yes, and he's a great actor. Have you ever seen White Christmas?
No.
Okay, we have to watch that too, because you would really like that
movie. What's it about?
Okay, well, Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby are soldiers, and then they, in World War II, then they come back, and they're doing, like, you know, singing and dancing and all of that jazz,
and all that jazz.
Exactly. And then they decide to go to Vermont, on a whim, because they're tired of the, showbiz life or whatever, and, they wind up going to an inn run by their old platoon general, and business isn't good, and so they like try and revive business, and meanwhile both of them fall in love. And that's where Danny Kaye does the theater, what's happened to the theater? And he does a really great number, and he gets a really hot girl.
Really?
Yeah. Who? Well, her name's like Betty something, and she, or like Betty Grable, I think.
Okay.
And she had her legs insured for $1 million.
Oh my god.
Because she had such good legs, and she has the tiniest waist. It's literally like this big. That's and I'm weird. Not exaggerating. It's so tiny.
Isn't that kind of creepy?
Yeah, it's a little bit creepy, but that's back then anyway. But it's really fun, and that's where they sing, I'm dreaming of a white. Oh, yeah. You know, it's Irving Berlin.
Do they also sing Have Yourself a Merry Christmas?
No, that's in Meet Me in St. Louis. But you would like White Christmas. And then they also sing, we'll follow the old man wherever he wants to go. As long as he wants to go over the hills and snow. We'll follow the old man wherever he wants to go. You know, there's like absolutely no religious things associated with it.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. So, but it's really, really good. Especially because Danny Kaye is really great.
Yeah, Danny Kaye's awesome.
He always plays second fiddle. It's so sad.
Well, you know.
But he plays good second fiddle.
Oh, after we turn this off, I want to show you where Tom Ware talks about him.
Okay. Sounds
funny. I like Tom Ware a lot.
I like him too.
He's really funny.
He's funny.
Okay, let's take a night.
Night.
Night, Carrie. Sleep well.